Hello. Welcome to Illinois Radio Reader. This is Lisa with the News Gazette, dated Wednesday, December 11th, 2024. Today on the front page at the very top is an article from Danville with the heading, "I'm very happy to be retiring," by Jennifer Bailey. Outgoing President Stephen Nacko discusses his departure, plans for the future. From Danville Area Community College, the second half of this year has been quite the whirlwind for Danville Area Community College President Stephen Nacko around a dispute with Danville Mayor Ricky Williams Jr. concerning undocumented immigrants. The News Gazette recently sat down with Nacko at his campus office to talk about this year. Some people and employees who aren't fans of his love of the community he's called home for 8 years, his legacy, and why he seems happy now. Nacko is retiring Friday after reaching an agreement with the DACC Board of Trustees. Nacko had been placed on administrative leave while an investigation occurred into the dispute with Williams. He's finishing up his presidency, splitting his time, working in office and at home. One of the last items he's working on is a Clean Energy Jobs Act grant. It's a state program for skills training to lead into apprenticeships and those types of jobs. In looking back at this year's as president from a grading perspective, Nacko said the grade he'd give himself as president during the last 8 years is an A for effort. "I did the best I could and committed myself 100% to this college and for students and for faculty," Nacko said. "In my overall assessment, that would be left to others, but my effort, I never shortchanged this college." Nacko said regarding his dispute with the mayor, stemming from a disagreement over whether to welcome undocumented immigrants to the area, and which led to Williams approaching the DACC board with a letter about Nacko's alleged deplorable behavior when confronted about the issue, that he's come out of this with no ill will toward the college or the mayor. "The mayor is the mayor, and I'm not his judge. There's a point where going back and forth and arguing with someone like the mayor is futile. I had argued with him, and it led to even more arguments. That was pointless. The college at no time recruited illegal immigrants, so just so we can put a lid on that one," Nacko said. "What we would do, though, as a college, is we would teach anyone who shows up and will support anyone who's trying to improve our community," he added. Nacko said he doesn't have any animosity toward anybody. "I'm very happy to be retiring on December 13th, he said. "It was a great decision in the end. It wasn't necessarily what the original intent of a lot of people were, but the way it worked out is perfectly acceptable to me and my wife. We're happy to stay in the community, and we're happy to do what we can do to support DACC and other groups they've been involved with." As to some faculty members voting no confidence in Nacko continuing as president, saying the argument with the mayor wasn't an isolated incident, and there were other arguments and incidents with DACC employees and complaints against him, he said. "I was here over 8 years, and I have about 4 or 5 people who suddenly popped out of the woodwork and became my enemies, and never were prior to that. It is almost as if they needed something, some reason to come out of the woodwork, and they did. They came out, but it does not by any means represent the vast majority of the faculty or staff thoughts. There was no real vote of no confidence. We have 68 faculty, and according to that non-scientific way it was conducted, it was 33 who said they didn't have confidence in me. I have to think that it doesn't represent the faculty, and if they really did a vote of no confidence with all 68 allowed to vote, it would never have done that. They have tried that, the same group, and we're talking about 3 or 4 really disgruntled people who did it. They did it during COVID, saying that, and it also couldn't lead to a legitimate vote of no confidence. So, if there's any consolation, I know from the faculty here and the staff here that I've been a popular president here and I leave here with many friends," Nacko said. "And if there's only a handful of enemies, that's not such a bad thing." Nacko also has been accused by some employees of sending inappropriate emails. When asked if he has any regrets or anything he looks back on that maybe he shouldn't have done, I never ever want to offend anybody, and you can write things and send things and say things where in every crowd there could be someone offended. And that's what happens with leadership. There are times when in the crowd there's going to be somebody who objects. When that happens, and I say the same thing with the mayor, I want to be able to approach him and say, if I offended you, I'm sorry. Nacko said that if someone is offended by something, he wants to know. If you're going to suffer in silence and you're offended by anything, then don't come out 5 years later and try to pile on. And that's really what happened, Nacko said. He said these are just a few of DACC employees, and the people here are overwhelmingly supportive and good. And my wife and I have heard only positive things from employees, from the community, and that's really why I want to stay here. Because if I really thought that people were the way these few disgruntled people are, I wouldn't want to live here. But the people here are nice, and they're open-minded, and they're fair-minded. Because the ones who started the original attackers, these people were not fair-minded. They didn't know anything. They just wanted to pile on. They have to live with themselves. I'm extremely happy about being here in Danville and Vermilion County, and that's what I want to focus on. Nacko added that having a few faculty members not like him is not as important as Provost Carl Bridges managing all the faculty. Bridges' position has been more important than the president in keeping everything together, he said. Nacko said the best hire he made was Bridges, who has combined student services with academics in a way that the college has never been in better shape. Nacko also talked about some of the highlights at the college through his years, including setting a record for the graduation rate of more than 46%. The national average is 22%. This year, and returning enrollment to the pre-academic level of more than 20,000 credit hours. It's a whole series of programs and a commitment by a lot of people from student services to faculty to get that kind of enrollment, Nacko said. He said a big part of the enrollment was outreach to the African-American community and low socioeconomic community, so that's helped build a better DACC as our students now look more like our own community. The first floor of Hegler Hall and former U.S. Army Navy Reserve Center is now renovated. Corporate and community education are in its space. The first floor consists of classrooms where students can study to become pharmacist technicians or practice drawing blood, offices, a studio, and other areas. Community education programs include chair yoga, pottery, cooking, and bunco club. The new leadership will figure out what will be on the second floor, with construction continuing next year. Clock tower center renovations included HVAC, asbestos abatement, plumbing, electrical, and other work that we're finishing up with the library, eSports, and others to move back in January. Another construction phase, including the elevator and tuck pointing, still is needed. He said other highlights through this year at DACC have included air conditioning in the Mary Miller Gym, broadcast TV studio, branding team, All-Star Jaguars, the return of golf and volleyball, and other student programs, expansion of classes, and other additional associate degrees. For 2025, DACC will see the barber program start at the Village Mall. There will be an expansion in what they've started in customer relationship management. For every student walking through the door, through graduation, it's setting up a whole intake process, Nacko said, adding that student services will go hand in hand with academics. In academics, there's a conversation to the new learning management system, Canvas, and improving student interaction with faculty. There will also be an expansion of dual enrollment classes for high school students. Finally, high flex classrooms will allow students on campus and off to interact together. Nacko said that when he looks back on this year as president, they were an extremely enjoyable 8 years at DACC. When he first came to campus, new living in the Midwest, he said he didn't know what to expect. It's been a wonderful adventure for 8 years, and my wife and I are here and are remaining here and our heads held high because it's a wonderful community, it's a great community college, and we like it here, Nacko added. For the future, after Friday, he's running for a seat on the DACC Board of Trustees, and we'll see if he gets elected in April. If elected, he said he can help the college form a different perspective. If not, as a retiree, he still can help the college in other ways, Nacko said. Nacko, too, added about Randy Fletcher, who will be taking over as interim president on Monday. I met him while he was working at Joliet, and he seems like a great person. I wish him well. still on the front page from the Champagne Schools by Luke Taylor, Bubbling with Joy is the title. Toys specifically modified by a group of U of I students put smiles on local kids' faces. With some help from Carroll Illinois College of Medicine students, Essential Skills Classroom across Unit 4 have a little extra holiday cheer this season. Members of Innovators in Action, a group of CIMED and other engineering students at the University of Illinois, modified toys to make them more accessible and gave one to every single Essential Skills student at Central High School, Franklin STEAM Academy, the Champaign Early Childhood Center, and Stratton Elementary School. The college students visited each school Tuesday to personally deliver the toys, with a few extras for teachers to keep in their classrooms. It was really impactful to have a one-on-one experience with the kids and really see their faces light up when they are actually able to play with toys that are made for them and accessible to them, said one CIMED student, Gregory Ridgel. A lot of students with special needs are often having to adapt to everything else around them and having to adapt to a world that isn't made for them. On the surface, the bubble machines the kids receive don't seem too different from how they came out of the box. The small change the students created, which could make all the difference, was adding a large button for the kids to press rather than fiddling with small switches or controls. We just incorporate that into the super simple circuitry of the toy, said Jake Nazarian, another CIMED student. We'll take off usually the back of the toy, access a couple wires, and then incorporate the switch, which you can also think of as a large button. Olubosueu Oni, CIMED student and president of Innovators in Action, said the group plans to continue working with area special education classes as well as places that it can support adults with disabilities. We're all differently abled in some way, and sometimes it's just more visible to some people than it is for others. So in the future, we're all going to have to be part of this in one way or another, Oni said. After watching her students play in a cloud of bubbles for nearly an hour, Stratton Essential Skills teacher Samantha Verrocki was pretty happy. She said that another group from the University of Illinois reached out about providing some accessible art supplies to her class around the time Innovators in Action got in touch with the school district. But this was the first time in her 5 years at Stratton that something like this had happened. Adaptive toys are really hard to come by. They're also really expensive, which is heartbreaking as an educator, but also a parent, because our kids don't have access to a lot of the toys that are age-appropriate for them, Verrocki said. We're really proud of the things that we do with all of our students, and we're very grateful that other people see the need as well and can help us continue to make things engaging for our kids. And there's some very nice pictures of the children playing with the bubble machine in the classroom. And in a special insert with the title of Spotlight on Giving, Why I Give by Pat Nolan. With our fifth annual Guide to Giving publishing Friday, we're sharing first-person stories of community members who go above and beyond in support of local nonprofits. First up, Immigrant Services of Champaign-Urbana donor and volunteer Pat Nolan. Most of the population of this country are descended from immigrant ancestors. I am a fifth generation Irish American. The president-elect's mother is an immigrant and his father is the son of an immigrant. When I was in grade school, we lived in Japan for 3 years, and learning about different cultures was only normal. As a child from a constantly moving military family, I was frequently the new kid on the block. As an adult, I'm sensitive to newcomers. I've worked with ISCU since its early days as a CU Friends and Allies of Immigrant and Refugees. My friend Mimosa came here from Albania through the lottery process and worked as a housekeeper in the hotel industry. Currently, her daughter is working on her PhD and her son has just graduated from college. This is what happens. This is a normal progression for immigrants in this country. They pay it back. My friend Shamim is a former asylum seeker from Nigeria, where her family was included in ethnic cleansing. She is gainfully employed As she works through the asylum process, many of these folks come to the U.S. because their homelands are no longer safe, and they come with very little. I donate financially and volunteer in the warehouse at the ISCU, where we put together donated goods to help families get a fresh start in this country. It is rewarding to know that we can help families as they start their new lives here. Moving on to our communities, an article with the title U.S. Department of Labor, Illinois Workers Can Claim Unpaid Wages Totaling More Than $4.2 Million by Talia Soglin. More than 5,500 Illinois workers owed back pay totaling more than $4.2 million can claim their unpaid wages online, the U.S. Department of Labor said Tuesday. The funds are the result of investigations by the department's Wage and Hour Division, which recovers back pay for workers when they are underpaid in violation of laws, including minimum wage and overtime laws. Among the division's top priorities is putting wages recovered by its investigation swiftly into the hands of people who earned them. The department said in a news release, Illinois workers can find out if they are owed back pay by searching for an employer or former employer's name on the Department Workers Owed Wages, or WOW, search tool online, which is available in English and Spanish. When workers provide their name and employer, the system will confirm whether or not there were wages owed to them. If a worker is owed wages, they must submit a signed form, contract information, and some form of identification, such as a driver's license or state ID, taxpayer identification card, or pay stub, in order to claim them. Wages are held in the WOW system for 3 years and then sent to the U.S. Treasury if they remain unclaimed, Labor Department spokesperson Scott Allen said. And from Savoy, an article with the heading Savoy Planning Commission Backs McDonald's Proposal by Jana Wiersema. The Golden Arches could be coming to Savoy. A new approximately 5,100-square-foot McDonald's location with a drive-through is planned for 509 South Dunlap Avenue, just east of Walmart. Savoy's Planning Commission voted Monday night to recommend that the Village Board approve the proposed site plan for the restaurant, Village Administrator Christopher Walton told the News Gazette. The Board of Trustees will consider the item sometime in January of 2025, he said. The project is subject to architectural and aesthetic review because it is located in the Community Commercial Zoning District, community planner Caitlin Kelly wrote in a report to the commission. The subject property is currently vacant. Improving the property with a commercial structure is likely to improve the value not only of the subject property, but of the surrounding properties, Kelly wrote. And then there's a picture of that area there on Dunlap Avenue. Let's check the police blotter. From Champaign, by Jana Wiersema, 21-year-old killed in Monday shooting. Police are investigating a shooting that occurred Monday night and resulted in the death of a 21-year-old woman. No arrests yet have been made in the ongoing investigation, police said. Officers were dispatched at 7:50 p.m. Monday to the 2400 block of West Springfield Avenue after receiving a report of a shooting with injuries. Police said the female victim had multiple life-threatening gunshot wounds, and officers provided medical aid with assistance from the fire department until she could be moved to the area hospital, where she succumbed to her injuries a short time later. The initial investigation indicates that a man and a woman entered a business when an unknown subject opened fire, police said. The woman was struck multiple times. The man was not struck. The subject then fled the area on foot. At this time, the reason for the gunfire remains unknown. Officers are still investigating the surrounding area in hopes of finding witnesses and video footage. Police ask anyone with additional information to call 217-351-4545 and said that arrangements can be made for information to be shared privately. Anonymous tips can be submitted to Crime Stoppers at 217-373-8477. And, of course, Crime Stoppers will pay a cash reward. Also reported in Champaign, Northwest Champaign, two in hospital after rear-ended vehicle overturns. Two people were hospitalized with minor injuries after a two-vehicle accident Tuesday morning northwest of Champaign. A release from Champaign County Sheriff Dustin Hoerman said that 84-year-old Muhammad Man was driving a white Ford Escape south in the 2900 block of North Staley Road at 10:26 a.m. when he slowed down to cross some railroad tracks and was rear-ended by a 2017 gray Honda hatchback driven by a 30-year-old Thomasboro man. The impact caused the Escape to overturn, and firefighters had to extricate a female passenger in the vehicle, the release said. She and the driver of the Honda were taken to an area hospital with minor injuries, Hoerman said. He said the driver of the Honda was ticketed for failure to reduce speed to avoid an accident and operating an uninsured motor vehicle. Let's move on to J. Mark Powell's opinion piece in his Holy Cow History, the Christmas classic first popularized as a drinking song. It is one of the very first Yuletide songs the youngest of children learn. The lyrics are easy, and its music is peppy, making it the ideal holiday song for little kids. Who among us hasn't heard toddlers warbling at the top of their little lungs to adoring parents, "Jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way"? Mom and Dad probably wouldn't be beaming so happily if they knew the backstory of that beloved Christmas classic, because when the song originally came out, it certainly would have been considered age-appropriate by today's standards. It would not have been considered age-appropriate. It was called the One Horse Open Sleigh when it was first published in 1857. Even back then, its words conjured images of simpler, more carefree times. It's difficult for 21st century minds to imagine now, but a heavy snowfall often brought a treat to 19th century folks. Consider these lines from a letter written in February 1865 by a Union soldier to his girlfriend in upstate New York. "I presume you did not fail to take advantage of the deep snow. I imagine I see you on a cold, pleasant, moonlit night, gliding over the crystal surface, preceded by nettlesome steeds and the pleasant ringing of musical bells, which seem to mock the joyous laughter of you and your companions." After enjoying one such sleigh ride, James Lord Pierpont recognized a song was waiting to be written. He was an interesting character. Son of a New England minister, he ran away to sea at age 14, later returned, married, and started a family. He settled in Medford, Massachusetts, where his father was pastor at a Unitarian church. The urge to wander returned with the 1849 California Gold Rush. Pierpont wound up in San Francisco, where he had a store and a photography studio before losing both in a fire. He returned to New England flat broke. After Pierpont's wife died in 1856, his brother accepted the pastorate of a Unitarian church in Savannah, Georgia, and Pierpont tagged along to serve as music minister. He wrote songs and gave organ and singing lessons on the side, all the while composing a steady stream of music himself. He became successful enough that he met and married the daughter of the Savannah mayor. In 1857, he released the song we still sing today. But the One Horse Open Sleigh bombed so badly when it first came out that he had to rebrand it. It was released in 1859 as Jingle Bells. Even then, it was far from a bestseller. Ironically, alcohol, not school kids, spread the tune. Jingle Bells became a popular Victorian-era drinking song, with singers clinking their glasses to imitate the sound of bells. And get this, the lyrics were even considered racy for the time, too. A young couple sleigh riding without a chaperone? Hubba hubba. Risque stuff. Despite the initial setbacks, Jingle Bells has stood the test of time, but one question still lingers. Where exactly did Pierpont pen the piece? Medford, Massachusetts, and Savannah, Georgia, each claim to be the song's birthplace. A plaque in downtown Medford asserts that Pierpont wrote it at the Simpson Tavern in 1850. It even cites that Mrs. Otis Waterman, who said she remembered it. Nonsense. Savannah adherents huff. Just look at the calendar. Pierpont was living in that coastal city when the song was first published. It stands to reason it was written there as well. Which claim is accurate? Who knows? While history lovers like to nail down these little details, in this case, it really doesn't matter. From the moment it was recorded for the very first time on an Edison wax cylinder in 1889 to countless elementary school Christmas concerts around the country in 2024, it remains a timeless favorite, which is why James Lord Pierpont is honored in the Songwriters Hall of Fame. So remember him the next time you belt out Jingle Bells at a Christmas party. And if the kids have been put to bed, go ahead and clink your glasses. Pierpont wouldn't mind. In another opinion piece by Jim Dye, teachers' pension system bears brunt of states' underfunding. Illinois teachers' retirement system holds the largest share of the total $144.3 billion in unfunded liabilities for the state's five public pension systems. The teacher system, according to a recent report, has an unfunded liability of $83.6 billion, 58% of the state's total pension debt. The report released by the Legislators' Commission on Government Forecasting and Accountability said the state's five public pension funds have liabilities of $266.3 billion and assets of $122 billion, leaving an unfunded liability of $144.3 billion. All told, that represents a 46% funding ratio for the pensions for teachers, state employees, university employees, judges, and legislators. The legislators' pension fund is the most poorly funded, holding assets that represent just 24.6% of what's owed to current members and retirees. The judges' system has a 4.3% funding ratio. State university employees have a 46% funding ratio, and state employees are at a 45.8% funding ratio. The report cited past governors and legislators are responsible for the pension fiasco. The primary driver behind the growth in combined unfunded liability has been actuarially insufficient state contributions determined by the current pension funding policy under state law, the report states. It also said liabilities will continue to grow if the state continues to make annual contributions insufficient to stop the growth in unfunded liability. The report is referring to the current practice of making statutorily required contributions that are less than what are actuarially required to keep the current underfunding level stable. The state has been wrestling with the consequences of reckless pension funding for roughly 30 years. In 1994, former Governor Jim Edgar signed a law mandating annual pension payments for 50 years that were designed to eliminate an underfunding level of roughly $15 billion by 2045. But his successors failed to meet their funding obligations, the result being that the underfunding has skyrocketed to $144.3 billion. As a result, state pension contributions continue to consume large percentages of the operating budget. For the 2025-26 fiscal year beginning July 1st, the state is expected to contribute $11.7 billion to pensions, roughly 20% of its anticipated $50 billion-plus spending plan. Governor J.B. Pritzker has pledged that the state will meet its pension obligations, and that's why he's desperate for more revenue. Past governors and legislators have attempted to slow future pension spending, but the Illinois Supreme Court has ruled that the Illinois Constitution's pension clause forbids any modification of future unearned benefits once an individual is enrolled in a state plan. That's why prominent Chicago Democrat Forrest Claypool recently wrote a newspaper op-ed calling for dramatic action to control exploding pension costs. He said Chicago and Illinois are sinking in a quicksand of pension debt, and citizens must take city and state government back from the politicians serving the special interests rather than their own. Claypool said it falls to citizens to petition and adopt state constitutional amendments, reestablishing the balance between taxpayers and the public sector unions controlling city and state government. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half of the News Gazette.